the middle of the summer. Okay, Parshas Emor, the beginning of page 672. We're actually going to come back to this, the beginning of the parsha, to focus on a little bit about the role of chinuch, the role of education. But the parsha begins with a discussion of Kohanim, the laws of Tumas Kohanim, what a Kohen can and cannot become Tamei to. You then have at the bottom of 674 a very unique halacha, and that is that a Kohen that has a mum, just like an animal that has a mum, has a blemish, cannot be offered, a Kohen that has a mum cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And the question is why? There's a number of opinions as to why. Maybe because the karbanos had to be pure, so the kohanim have to be pure. The Rambam actually says, the Rambam has a fascinating approach in the Mor Nevuchim, where the Rambam says that there's nothing wrong with people that have a blemish. It's that we're not okay with people that have blemishes. And if we're not okay with it, well, that affects the totality of what happens inside the inside the Beis HaMikdash. I remember Rabbi Penner, Mark Penner, once shared a very powerful suggestion that the Beis HaMikdash is, and you know, him and his family growing up with a child with special needs, that the Beis HaMikdash was a microcosm of what the world should be. Right, it's what we want the world to be. Just like at Har Sinai, but the Beis HaMikdash is a mini Har Sinai. What happened at Har Sinai with everybody that had it blemishes? They all got better, right? The world in its ideal state is a world in which everything is pure and everything is holy, and that's what the Beis HaMikdash would say. It's a prayer, it's a tefillah for a world in which there is no disease, in which there is no poverty, in which there is no handicap of anything. We're able to serve in a very pure sense. But that's the bottom of page 674. Then you get to more about the Kohanim. If you turn all the way to where are we here? Page, for example, you have on 682, you then have some laws of the, I'm sorry, we actually skipped, you go back, turn back to page 6, or page is it here? The bottom of page 680, here you have the commandment of Kiddush Hashem. Torah tells us at the bottom of page 680, Ushmarta mitzvos saivas yisem usam, you should watch my mitzvos, ani Hashem v'lo sechalu Hashem kadshi, you should not desecrate my name. Chilul Hashem doesn't just mean when I walk outside and I do something bad. Chilul Hashem is anytime God's name is dragged through the mud, that's a Chilul Hashem. So, for example, any tragedy in Jewish history, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Salvechik used to say, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the structure of the Beis HaMikdash was a Chilul Hashem. How's that a Chilul Hashem? Because Chilul Hashem doesn't just mean, you didn't say thank you and you're a Jew. Chilul Hashem means that the name of God has now been, right? And what happened in the Beis HaMikdash? The Romans said, look, you think you're God? Right? Titus is going to slash the parochas. That's a Chilul Hashem. So that's part one. V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. And you should sanctify my name, Ani Hashem Mekadishchem. This is the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So what is the mitzvah of Kiddush? We say it all the time. So what does it mean? So let's start for a second. I don't want to spend too much time. We did this a number of years ago. But just a few thoughts on Kiddush Hashem. Number one is if you look in the first source, the Rambam tells us, Kol Beis Yisrael, the entire house of Israel is mitzavin al Kiddush Hashem. Now what does it mean, all the Beis Yisrael? The Rabbi Lau tells a story that Rabbi Lau, when he gets to Israel, he meets, I forgot maybe the Tibchina Rav, I forgot the exact name. He meets a Rav, and the Rav says that your father, the Rabbi Lau's father was a town Rav, your father sent me a sefer of his to give a haskama, right? In the old days, when you wrote a sefer, you couldn't scan a copy. You had to literally take a page of the sefer, mail it, hopefully that it got there. Then they hopefully mail it back to you that they give you your haskama. So Rabbi Lau says, your father sent me one page. And on this one page was this Rambam. And where the Rambam says, Kol Beis Yisrael, the Rabbi Lau's father says that Kol Beis Yisrael, usually if it's an obligation, a mitzvah, a man or woman, it should say what? Either it should say Ish Mitzaveh or Ish Oisha Mitzaveh. What does Kol Beis Yisrael sound like? Including children. That was Rabbi Lau's father's chiddush, that even children were mitzavah al Kiddush Hashem, and that's Rabbi Lau's father. Obviously, he's not with his father. He's an 8-year-old boy coming to Israel. And the Tzimtzum Rav says, this is this was the page, this is the chiddush that your father gave me. So, and the Rambam quotes our parsha, V'nikdashi b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Not only should you sanctify it, should be careful not to profane the name of God. Now you notice it's interesting that the Rambam here actually flips what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk starts with Chil Hashem and ends with Kiddush Hashem. Okay. So Ketzad. So now, what are examples of Kiddush Hashem? So if I were to ask you, what is the classic example of Kiddush Hashem, what would you say? So Kiddush Hashem. What's Kiddush? Kiddush Hashem sounds like someone dies. Oh, Kiddush Hashem. Right? The greatest form. So look into Chama Leibowitz. So Chama Leibowitz says, what a strange commandment that enjoins us who are not holy to sanctify God's name. The answer we found if we distinguish between the essential holiness of God which transcends time and place, unaffected and unchanged, by the holiness of His name. Meaning, we obviously can't be God. But we can, the positive precept to sanctify the name of God amidst the children of Israel, and the negative one is not to profane Him, implies recognition of His sovereignty over us. So when we do things that mark, we are Jewish people, and we do things to show that that's how we act, and somebody says, ah, that's how a Jew should act, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Look at the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says the following. You thought it was your teacher and when they got off the bus and you, at the field trip that told you this. It's based on a Gemara. The Gemara says, you shall love your God. The name of God should become beloved through your acts. When a person studies the Bible in Jewish law, the Gemara says, ministers to scholars, speaking softly with people, honest and honorable in his business dealings, what do people say of him? This person who studied Torah, fortunate is the father who taught him, woe to the people who have not studied Torah. That's a Kiddush Hashem. You go about your business the right way, you're honest, you say please and thank you, and then someone says, that's what it means, Kiddush Hashem. And what's the opposite? Chil Hashem is the opposite. Now, what if you were not to know the next piece of the Gemara, what would you say the opposite is? The guy who doesn't learn Torah and doesn't do anything, and someone says, ah, Nebuch, that's the Jew. What's the opposite? The opposite is the person who learns Torah, but uses his Torah. Now, you need both. If you're just really, really nice, but you don't have the Torah to back you up, so then that's not Kiddush Hashem. That's just being a person. If you have the Torah, but without being nice, that's not Kiddush Hashem. And in fact, it's either Kiddush Hashem or Chil Hashem. There's no parav. So if you learn Torah, but you're not nice, and you're crude, and you're a mean person, so they say, oh, that's the person who learns Torah. And that's what we tell our kids every time you got off the bus. Yeah, I gave my 8th graders a whole speech. You're going to go to Washington. They're Washington now. I said, it's a real thing. Kiddush Hashem is a real thing. And you're going to see you with the yarmulke, and they're going to see you with the tzitzis. Hopefully, and they're gonna say, you know. So you have to really make sure. I said when the stewardess, some of these kids never been on a plane. I said when the stewardess comes down, I said like I tell my own kids, take your headphones off, say please and say thank you. Everybody else on the plane is gonna do it. It doesn't make a difference what everybody else on the plane is gonna do. So that's Kiddush Hashem. So it's very interesting. I just had this discussion yesterday. I do like a lunch and learn. Different grades, different times. So I had one with 7th graders yesterday, and I gave them this example. So one of the kids raised her hand and she says, you know, well, when we were in Disney World a few years ago, my father told us when we asked for something to put our baseball hats on so that they wouldn't see our yarmulkes. So it was that wrong. I said, it's not wrong. I said, it's unfortunate that we're concerned today, unfortunately, about anti-Semitism. I said, it's the sad reality of which we live in. But the ideal world would be that you would go about and someone say, well, that's that's a Jew. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has this story that Rav Yaakov was once asked by someone in his town in Lithuania that the post office gave them extra stamps or whatever it was. So Rav Yaakov says, you have to give it back. So then Rav Yaakov, a few weeks later, is in the post office, and he's also given extra stamps, and he smiled, and he hands them back. And the guy says, why are you smiling? He goes, I know that you were testing me to see what I would do. So I give them back. And Rav Yaakov says that he found out later that this was one of the only people in this town of non-Jews that saved Jews in the Holocaust. All right, so, you know, the effects of Kiddush Hashem. There's this great story. The guy's name is Arthur Mills, maybe. I forgot his name is. A few years ago, there was a tremendous fire in a warehouse somewhere, non-Jewish area, but the whole warehouse burned down. All the workers had no. The town was built around this factory, and he decided not only to. He could have got insurance money and rebuilt his factory in China. He rebuilt it in the same town so that people would have jobs, and he paid them through all of their time off. So that's Kiddush Hashem, but it works the opposite. The way, when we don't do things, or we are nice, or we have to be extra careful because we are, you know, we're were looked at differently. If you look at the next page, the for example, look at source. We'll skip the Rambam for a second. Look at source 5. So the smag, okay, the smag lived in the 1200s, and the smag would travel around, literally traveling around city to city, country to country, trying to inspire Jews to get better, to bring geula. He thought like the end was like it was things were so bad. That's 1200 in France. Okay, we're now in 2000. So says the smag. I've already instructed the Jews who are in exile in Spain and the rest of the exiles in Europe that now that the exile has extended for such a long time, 1200s, it is fitting for the Jewish people to separate themselves from the vanities of the world and grasp the seal of God, meaning truth. They should not lie. What was his issue he was railing against? It was sheker, it was lying. The Jews should not lie to Jews or Gentiles, nor cheat them in any way, and to sanctify themselves that which was permitted to them. And when God, he's the next paragraph, will redeem them, they will say, he acted justly, for they are people of truth, and the truth is in their mouths. But if they will act with trickery towards the Gentiles, they will say, look at what God did. He chose as his share thieves and crooks. That's the smag, traveling around, telling the Jews, you have to be better people. I have a friend of mine who's a lawyer in New York, and years ago he told me that his partner or someone in his firm had come into his office and said, doesn't it say in your Ten Commandments you can't steal? It's not that he like wanted to get into like, it's really kidnapping, like, you know, it wasn't like a halachic discussion. And he says, yeah, he didn't understand. He says, why do I keep seeing these stories? And again, every time that, you know, every time a Jew is on the news, it's always a rabbi, even though they're not rabbis. It gives rabbis bad names, right? But this is what the smag in the 1200s talk about Kiddush Hashem. Now, the greatest form of Kiddush Hashem, obviously, is to die on Kiddush Hashem. But in some ways, that is it's a one-time, I'm not saying it's easier, but it's a one-time decision. And living Al Kiddush Hashem is an everyday decision. It's an every moment decision. How am I going to go about this interaction? How am I going to run my business? How am I going to run my relationships with my community? It's an every moment kind of life. That's why Kiddush Hashem shouldn't only be looked in as someone's dying Al Kiddush Hashem. It's how we live. You know, like the kinos talk about on Tisha B'Av, based on a medrash, that Yirmiyahu goes to plead on behalf of the Jewish people, and he goes to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe. None of them work, and all of a sudden he gets to Rachel, and Rachel cries, and Rachel wins. Shavavanim ligvulam. Rachel mevaka al banea, save the day. So everybody wants to know why Rachel. What did Rachel do versus everybody else? So the Drashot El Ami, Rav Avigdor Amiel, who's the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. So he writes in a beautiful piece that Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, all of their claims to God was something that they're willing to die. I was willing to die, Yitzchak. I was willing to die. Al Kiddush Hashem. Avram said I was going to offer my son. Al Kiddush Hashem. And it's only Rachel who says I lived by Kiddush Hashem. I didn't embarrass my sister. I gave her the signs. I didn't want to make her feel ashamed. And that's he says that's living Al Kiddush Hashem. It's one thing to die Al Kiddush Hashem, and it's the highest form. But living Al Kiddush Hashem is something we're tasked with every day. Okay, but that's just that the source for Kiddush Hashem comes from this parsha and Parshas Emor. Okay, you then get to the Yamim Tovim again come up here. In fact, you have the bottom here, page 682. You finally, we have we're in right now, the mitzvah of the Omer. The Torah says that you'll bring this carbon. If you look at the next page, the Omer itself is just a measurement. Okay, but the Pasuk says, the Pasuk Tezvav, Usfartem lochem imacharas ha-shabbas. You should count for yourselves. Famously, this is one of the most famous debates between the Jews and the Karaites. Karaites only believe in Torah Shebechsav. So when does imacharas ha-shabbas mean? Right, so they, for them, this year falls out great. When do they celebrate Shavuos this year? With us. Or maybe we're celebrating with them. But most likely they're celebrating it with us. They always keep it. I don't know, maybe because they want it. It's easier if it's they can sleep Shabbos afternoon. They can stay up. Although you have to imagine, what would a Karaite Shavu? I mean, I don't know. It's just, you're just Torah. I don't know. I guess if it's a lot of Tanakh. So it says, Mimachrata Shabbos, Rashi tells us, it doesn't mean Shabbos, it means the day after the first day of Pesach. Okay, we bring this carbon usfartam lachem, and I share with you here from Rabbi Soloveitchik, what's the goal of Sfiras Omer? What's the goal of the counting? I gave a share this past Shabbos that Sfiras Omer is not a sad time. Sfiras Omer is a really, really, really happy time. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be from the counting of Pesach. What's the date for Shavuos in the Torah? There is no date because it ends 49 days after you count the Omer. That is the bridge. The Ramban calls this in-between period Chol HaMoed. So we start with Pesach. We build up, right, all this anticipation of getting ready. We're counting towards Matan Torah. We're so excited. That's what this whole period is building. The Rav talks about that the use of counting and appreciation of time. They were slaves. Right now, we have to remember, we had Pesach a while ago, and we read these parashios a long time ago. But in Jewish history, they just celebrated Pesach. They're now working towards Matan Torah. It's very exciting. And they were just slaves. So what do they have to learn to appreciate as Jews? Time. You know, like Shacharis, Mincha, I got to do this. There's a lot of, you have to appreciate the day. So the Rav talks about the fact that they had to use the medium of time to become free. That's Pesach, and it ends in Shavuos. It's a very, very exciting time. Why did it become sad? It only became sad because of two major things. Either became sad, well, not either. The first thing that became sad is because of the death of Rabbi Akiva's students, right? And also it became sad because of the Crusades. The Crusades happened between Pesach and between Shavuos. The towns that are wiped out in the beginning of Iyar, in the beginning of Sivan, we say it in the Kinos, B'sheni V'shmona Bo, whatever it is, the eighth day of the second month, Nisan Iyar, right? That this is between Pesach and between Shavuos. And the Crusades, just to understand a little bit historically, the Crusades completely shift Jewish history. Until, if you look at all the historians, you look at the book called In the Year 1096 by Robert Chazen, The Anguish of the Jews, if you look, it changes because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Jews are attacked. Yeah, they lost the Beis HaMikdash. There was a reason. The Romans had a war, and they wanted to destroy us. We lost, and we were upset about it, but we knew why we were fighting. The Crusaders, the Christians, were on their way from Europe to where? Why? Because who was in Jerusalem? Who was in charge? The Muslims. They were going to get back the holy city from the Muslims. We're not Muslims, and we weren't in Jerusalem. So what would make a difference? Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Crusaders said, wait, one second, why wait to kill our enemies till we get to Jerusalem? Look what we have right here. And out of nowhere, the Jews are completely decimated, caught off guard, destroyed. We have chronicles. They're called Crusade Chronicles. You can read them. They're horrific. They are what happens. In out of nowhere, the Jews are attacked and they're killed. And that changes the nature of Sfiras Omer. That's why, you know, and that and the death of Rabbi Akiva's students.
Isn't that why we said Afarachim?
Very good. So yeah, so the Maharil was one of the great halachic commentators. The Maharil says you only say Afarachim between Pesach and between Shavuos. Because the if you look at Afarachim on Shabbos, that Afarachim in Tefillah is written for the Crusades. Shemasru nafsham al kiddush Hashem. Hanahavim, Hanaimim, Hanachmadim, those were loved and desired by God, they died al Kiddush Hashem. That's what the parasha talks about, yeah. So, in fact, you also had, there was a big debate in Israel. Well, the second day of the last days of Yontif, which was Shabbos in Israel. So it's Shabbos. So do you say Avarachim that day? Everybody agrees, Berach HaChodesh, that Shabbos, everybody said Avarachim. The question was, because what was now? It's not an issue at Chutz La'aretz because the but you still said Avarachim because it's Yizkor. Yizkor was on Friday in Israel. Shabbos was Parshas Achrimos, but since it's the day after Yontif, what is it? It's Isruchag. Yeah, my sister didn't understand. She goes, in Israel, they give obviously offer Isruchag, but because you have to get back, you know, people have to get back. So they had school on Sunday. How are people supposed to get back? But they have off Yisruchag, so now they have off. So that was a big deal. But the Maharil, in fact, Rabbi Frank used to tell me that in Frankfurt, they only said Avarachim twice. They only said Avarachim, Shabbos, Birchos HaChodesh, Nisan, Iyar and Shabbos Chazon. That was the only times they said it because of what it stood for. So that's the Crusades and the death of Rabbi Kiva students. The death of Rabbi Kiva students was a very sad time. That's where the Shulchan Aruch says, the Taz says we mourn for the, what's called Gzeres Tatnu, which is 1096, and the Shulchan Aruch talks about the death of Rabbi Kiva students. That's all these minhag, all this thing in Sfira is minhag based mostly. Weddings are the real halacha, but music, haircut, shaving, it's not similar to 3 weeks. 3 weeks is bona fide avelos. Maybe Shavasar v'tamas until Rosh Chodesh is a little less, because Ashkenazim are machmir, but everybody believes from Rosh Chodesh Av, it's bona fide avelos. We're really mourning. You can't do certain things. In Sfira, more like we're reflecting the mourning period. And this whole idea that Rabbi Kiva students were targeted because of Rome, first ever time. Okay, so that takes us from the midst of the Sfira Storm, which obviously should be a good time. Now it's turned into a sad time, but we're counting down towards Matan Torah, and that's why don't we make a Shachianu Sfira Somer? I want to make a why not? In the first thing you say Sfira, so Shachianu. Why not? It's a good question. So the Rabbi Soloveitchik, so there's a number of answers, but the Rabbi Soloveitchik's answer is that you don't make a Shachianu on something that's the beginning of a process. Why don't I say Shachianu? I made it to Hanukkah. I made it to Pesach. Right, I'm here. Okay, 7-8 days of Pesach, but I'm here. Sfiras Omer is a process. I'm really counting why. So I want to get to Matan Torah. That's what I'm really getting towards. So that it's also why maybe perhaps you don't say Shachianu at a wedding. You don't say Shachianu at a wedding. Why not? We hope it's the only one. Because it's a process. Imagine if the rabbi got up under the chuppah and the rabbi said, everything you work for, this is it. Right? And that's assuming you even want a speech under the chuppah. Maybe you don't want a speech under the chuppah. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning of the parsha. I share with you a very beautiful suggestion as to what happens in this first pasuk of the parsha. Okay, says the Torah, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe emor el akwanim bnei Aharon, say to the bnei Aharon, v'amarta alehem lenefesh lo yitama be'amav. Tell them you should not. The kohen cannot become metame. If you're a kohen, one of your favorite days at school is when, unfortunately, there's a funeral, right? There's a funeral, and they announce all kohanim have to go home." It's for us, for me and the brands. I mean, it was great. We went, we played, we went home. It was amazing. I mean, it was sad, obviously, but anyway. So there is a strange language in this part in this pasuk. What is the strange language in this pasuk? It says Emor Vayomer Shem Moshe, makes sense. Emor LaKohanim Bnei Aharon, and then it says Ve'amarta Lahem. It should just say Emor LaKohanim Bnei Aharon. Lenefesh lo yitama b'amav. So look at Rashi. The first Rashi on the parsha says Rashi, Emor ve'omarta lahazir gidolim al haktanim. It's a reminder that the older kohanim, so to speak, those that are the parents or the older generation, should remind the younger generation. Okay. Why would you need here? Now this comes up a few times, this language. Why would you need here this extra language, Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav? So turn in the sheets I gave you. I'm gonna skip. Go to page 4 for a second. We're gonna go to Rav Saratskin. Says Rav Saratskin, Emor ve'amarta. This double expression commands the grown kohan about the immature ones. Not only must the grown kohan avoid becoming contaminated, but they must avoid contaminating the immature kohan. Why are the grown-ups commanded about the little ones, particularly with this mitzvah? Burying the dead is such an important mitzvah, and the one performing it is exempt from putting on tefillin, saying Shema, praying, and all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. Even if they are not needed to bury the dead, under certain circumstances, the rabbis and their students cancel Torah study to participate in a funeral procession. Thus, when the Kohanim are commanded not to contaminate themselves for this, it prevents them from performing a significant mitzvah. It is difficult for them to understand why they, when being given extra mitzvos above and beyond the rest of the nation, are not permitted to take part in burying the dead. It's a weird thing. Here is a young Kohen who says, one second, they're running to this mitzvah, why can't I go? A simple-minded Kohen of little education might even violate this restriction because he did not understand its reasonings. Therefore, the grown Kohanim the Torah scholars who understand the high value of sanctity and the great harm inherent in contamination have to remind the young Kohanim. Those who understand must warn and explain the institution of Tumah to those who do not understand. And here you have actually one of the few times in the Torah there's a real, real commandment of education. We understand that it's going to be difficult. We understand that the environment that you're in, you're not, it wasn't like a special Kohen school for the Kohanim. They were in a school of everybody else. So they have a different, but they have different laws that apply to them. And you have to make sure, you have to be careful with them. But I want to turn to the next page. This in terms of this role of what it means to, about chinuch. The question is, and if you look in the parsha, it doesn't say banim or banos. It doesn't say children. It just says emaro ganim. Where else do you see that it's a reference to children? So look at this first of all. This tshuva the Rashba. Look at source 10. There aren't many places in the Torah where the Torah actually instructs us not just to educate our children, but it really tells us how to educate our children. Except when it comes to really Pesach night, Vigadat Levincha, you don't have a lot of roles about how to educate them. And here, the Torah, I believe, unlocks an important aspect of Chinuch. And I want to share with you from this Shuvah of the Rashba, from Moshe Feinstein, and then it's something from the end of the Parsha. So, listen to this Shuvah. The Rashba was asked the following question, Al Inyan Ataros Sefer Torah, about the crowns of the Torah, right? We have these beautiful crowns. Hamasimim berashei hakorim v'hatinokos biyom simchas Torah. What was happening? On simchas Torah, the kids are they're running around with the crowns on their head. Imuter la'asosim lav. Can we do it or not? Right. This is what they were asking the Rashba. So, whatever the Rashba answers is actually not even important. But listen to what the Rashba says. Zacharuni kishayisi katan. I remember when I was a kid. We took the ataros of the sfarim, and we also put them on our heads. And we did this. Not only did we do this, but look at what he says. Now you have to remember, the Rashba lives in the 1200s. When the Rashba was a kid, it's 1245. So who are his chachamei hador? They're not like shul rabbis. They're rishonim. Major rishonim, and they didn't say a word. Now, why didn't they say a word? The Shema, perhaps they didn't say a word. Ain mishtam shemah the tzorah chedyo, because they felt that this wasn't a small usage, like a layman's use of these crowns. Ella lekavod haTorah, lefoer uleromim kavod haTorah Elokeinu. The Rashi was talking about the fact. Well, what does he remember when he was a kid? I'm sure he remembers a lot of Torah that he learns, but what he recalls that what he learned from his youth was the reverence and the excitement, and he would put these crowns on, and the rabbis would see them, and they would say, great. Now, it doesn't mean that if you see a kid today running around with a crown, you should be like, oh, no, it's great. There's obviously a balance. But this idea that it's not just important in what we say to our kids, but in how we educate. And this is Ramosha Feinstein. This is, out of Ramosha's beautiful Sefer on the Torah. This is perhaps my most favorite piece. Says Ramosha, Amar al-Konim b'nei Aaron, Perish Rashi, Amar ve'amar t'la hazir gidolim al-haktanim. Like this Rashi, like a kid. U'l'cha'ora, gam ve'amar t'la harehu l'gidolim. Why does it have to mean that it's just one for the adults and one for the kids? Ve'eich yadinan shu l'ktanim. How do I know? Ve'nire, when we want to educate our children, and this means our own children, our community's children, now, obviously to an extent, but it doesn't really matter as much what you tell them to do. If they don't see it, that it's not just they don't see you doing it. That's not emotion. Emotion doesn't say they don't see you doing it. They don't see you loving it. Shem Yishma Me'aviv Shehu Hayalo. Now you have to remember, Moshe writing in America in the early, in the, you know, later half of the 19th century still, when it was, you know, I gotta go to work. It's Shabbos. Like, I'm gonna lose my job. It's annoying, but like, I gotta keep Shabbos. And many people did that. So it says Ramosha, Shem Yisra Me'aviv, Shailo Nisyonos Gidolim. If they hear that you have a lot of Nisyonos, like Kayim Mitzvah Shabbos V'yantiv, V'chol HaMitzvos, Rak Shemekomokom Tzarech La'amod B'Nisayon. Now, you could have somebody who says, it's too much for me, I'm not gonna do it. That's also not great Chinuch. Here Moshe is saying, it's not that you're not doing the mitzvah. It's that you're saying, ah, so difficult. It's so hard. I'm going to do it. What happens? Lo yischandcho habanim mizeh. Your children won't learn from this. Diyomru, because they'll say, einam giborim kemoso. Ah, we're not like Abba. Right? We're not like our great grandfather who really sacrificed. Ve'ein cholim lechbosh yitzram. We can't conquer our yetzer, our desires, and we'll give up. V'rak only kesheyishrim me'ha'av she'omer she'ein shum nisayon mekiyumat Torah v'hamitzvos. That it isn't difficult. Mikevon shu inyan chaviv. It's not to make it like, oh, Yom Kippur is the best. But to say that it's part of the love that I have. That's chayin of arichamino. Then they'll educate. And that's why he says, there's two amiros in this pasuk. One, you have to educate what's mutter and what's asr, what's right and what's wrong. That's one. And the second is, v'amarta is how I educate. That if you want your children to understand what you did, it's not just in what you say, and how you say it, that's part of the same thing, it's in how you go about the mitzvos. And if it's just, number one, it's not going to work. Because if you just say it and you don't follow it, that doesn't work. And then if you say it and do it, but don't do it with a passion, then it doesn't work either. Ramosha makes a similar point. When the Torah says, V'charta b'chayim, you should choose life, Ramosha says, how do I go about my observance of mitzvos? And how are we educating? And if we're educating by like, oh, I gotta go, and I gotta go to this, and I go to that, that negativity is felt. And part of our issue today is this exact issue. We don't have a generation that isn't doing things. We don't have a generation that is rebelling against practices. We have a generation that is, in some ways, apathetic. Okay, like, I don't know. And we're all trying to figure out ways, like, why, how could this be? Why is this? And part of the answer has to be in how we educate. If we think that if I brought my kids to shul, but I talked the whole time, and I talked during the rabbi's speech, and then at Shabbos lunch I mocked the rabbi's speech, and then I mocked the chazan, and I didn't go back for mincha. So what kind of chinuch is that? And that's what Rav Moshe is saying. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes that the Rav is a master educator, and the Rav says I could teach my students everything. If you want the Rav to give a class in any halacha, the Rav could give it. But the Rav says, I can't give over to my students the passion and the bren and the energy and what he felt from his rebbeim. He said, when he would look at his father and his grandfather davening on Yom Kippur, he says, it was like you were in the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, I can't give that over. How do I give that over? Then the Rav actually does give it over in his nature, but that's something that doesn't have do's and don'ts to it and words to it. It has actions. And that's Emor V'amarta and how we educate. And the truth is, it's very interesting because I believe if you look at the end of the parasha, there's one story at the end of the parasha about the end of the parasha, there is this story about the person who curses Hashem. So the Torah says there was Ben Isha Yisraelis, who Ben Ish Mitzri, Besoch, page 692. And he goes out, and he curses God, and they put him in prison, and Moshe doesn't know what to do. He goes to Hashem, and Hashem says you have to stone him. So the question is, did Moshe not know what to do? Why don't you know? Is this the first time somebody sins? Can't be. So one way you go of understanding Moshe's difficulty is, who is this guy? He is a Ben Ish Mitzri. So he has an Egyptian father who goes about his, wherever he goes about life. His mother, Rashi tells us, was a gossiper. So Moshe actually is saying, well, can I punish him? Because perhaps his influence is the reason he's acting this way. In the end, Hashem says yes, but Ish Ki Kalel. Everybody, you have to answer to yourself. You can't always, we sometimes like to blame everybody else. the reason this happened is because this, and if you only had a better Mora, a better Rebbe, a better school, better principal, better rabbi, better parents, better grandparents, better community, better JCC, then for sure my child would have turned out better, and I don't know what happened. But it's possible that that's Moshe's struggle, is what influences this can have. And that goes back to the beginning of the parasha. This Emor v'amarta is in how I go about the way that I educate. It's the attitude that I have. Our attitude, our persona, forget the words that we use. How I show my excitement for anything. It lends off much more of a vibe and of an influence than anything else. And that's what I want to share with this piece from Moshe, that it's Emor v'amarta. They're both to the adults. One is you have to educate, and one is you have to be careful in how you go about your education, how you show what's important to you. Okay.